I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
No, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
On Pilot TV this week, we are fresh out the slammer in ex-con revenge drama Reunion on BBC One, enjoying the timely release of a season of Hacks for a change as the fourth season of that show comes to Sky, and helping ourselves to other people's things in Your Friends and Neighbours on Apple TV Plus, for which I also got to hang out with John Hamm, and you'll hear a little bit more about that later on.
Smug.
Yes, so smug.
Already.
And I'm so
already
bitter.
Has crossed the smug barrier. Yeah, but dropping in John Hamm.
Well, what can I say? My close personal friend, John.
A slice of ham.
I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Violet TV, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that would like to apologise to Brian Glover, who last week I accused of being the star of 90s supernatural procedural Brimstone, which he had absolutely no part in. John Glover, on the other hand.
Well, there's also Julian Glover. There's another.
Julian Glover was not in Brimstone either.
No.
It was in fact, yeah. John Glover. But enough IMDb malapropisms, because I am delighted to be in the studio today with Kate Ribeiro and Floyd Hilton. How are you both?
Well, listen, I'm more likely to kick off more than that actor.
Yeah, because you know Katie Ribeiro gets a lot of malfunctioning name pronunciations, which is ironic because she herself is capable, more than capable,
that's true,
of mispronouncing
it's not any name
you came to mention. The irony of that, I've just thought of this actually. Imagine if you got a press release like listing you as doing something, you'd have to do a story on it. You'd have trouble pronouncing your own name.
No, you see, I've had a bit of practice with
it. She has.
So it's fine.
The thing I don't get is, because everyone does get your name wrong, it's not a complicated name. Like, it's really basic.
It's not basic.
You're basic.
Please.
No. What I'm saying, but it's not no, like Ribeiro.
Are you fairly coming for my family name? Let's just get some clarity on this.
Yes, apparently.
No, I don't think I'm not arrogant enough to say it's not like a common name, right? So I get that. And as Boyd quite rightly pointed out, I myself often bastardize other people's names and get them wrong.
True.
And that's why I feel so bad about it. But yeah, I just think, do you know what it is? It's when people are either emailing me, or I'm going to an event, for example, and they know who I am because they send me emails. They've met me several times, and then they make some awful blunder. It happened quite recently, and I was really devastated.
What do you mean regarding your name?
Yeah,
to your face, you mean?
Yeah, but I'm there, and like I'm at a table, and it's like with a nameplate.
Right.
And that really gets to me.
Gets to you most when your incorrectly spelled name is watermarked across a screener and you have to just watch it for an hour.
Oh, yeah. That's just like water torture.
Watermarked torture.
Yeah, indeed. But no, I think having a nameplate's worse, because then everyone looks at it and thinks that is your name.
Kate.
So
do you
I
ever get the double of Kate instead of K?
Yeah,
or
I've
Katie.
Had Kate Ribeiro.
Have you the double whammy? Oh my God.
Check my Instagram. Yeah. I think I've posted about it.
Jesus Christ.
I'm just going to start naming and shaming. Yeah.
Well, of course, I get people. No one knows. No one understands Boyd when I order in Starbucks or wherever, one of those places. Ever. I've stopped spelling out because I build up the different versions of it. Poit was one which was my.
I love that.
That was one which I had as my Instagram avatar or something. Maybe it still is, in fact.
Yeah, it is.
You know that the reason why the planet where the Death Star plans are stored in Star Wars Rogue One is called Scarif is because director Gareth Edwards went to Starbucks and ordered a coffee and they said, "What's your name?" He goes, "Scarif." And then they wrote Scarif on the cut when they gave it to him, and that's how he got the name of the
brilliant.
Planet.
Oh, I love
that's
that.
That's a great detail.
That's really good, yeah.
What about your name? Do you get it?
I mean, it's fairly basic, isn't it? James
Dyer. I mean,
the Dyer, I've had people misspell Dyer as D-I-E-R.
As in,
was that a command?
Kieran Dyer.
Yeah, maybe.
Kieran Dyer is a famous footballer who spells it that way.
Does he?
Yeah.
So he's the architect of all my pain.
Yeah.
Okay.
Probably.
But, you know, but Danny Dyer, I think, has popularised the D-Y-E-R spelling.
Right. Do people think you're related?
Not generally,
oh my God.
No.
Can you imagine if this was the big reveal?
Yeah.
You got Big Danny, Little Danny,
and then
James.
Me.
Yeah.
It'd be a bit like twins, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Like, you know.
I mean, considering you're the most middle class, posh white boy ever, I mean, not that But the class conflict alone would be entertaining to watch.
Do you think we could do a podcast together, me and Danny, called Dyer and Dyer?
I don't want a show. I want visuals.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
We could do that.
You could bring his daughter in, who's also called Danny, of course.
Dyer, right? Dyer, and Dyer. Dyer cubed.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is
the Dyer effect.
Let's moot it. Yeah.
Dyer warning. We could call it.
I'm trademarking it. Let's go.
The Dyer Army, your fans.
The Dyer Army.
Would love it.
Dyer in, like.
Wow. Okay, well, this has been fun, enjoying this a lot. Shall we move on to what we've been watching? Kay!
Sorry, I was just thinking of bad puns and I didn't even think what I was saying. Okay, so I have been watching I, Jack Wright, which is the new Chris Lang drama starring John Sim, which is upcoming on You and Alibi, but it's embargoed. And I think we'll be reviewing it, so I don't want to say too much.
I'm not even going to say why you've been watching
that. Yeah, don't say that.
No.
Yeah, we don't need.
Could I just say, we on the subreddit has transformed slightly. There is now a single feedback thread on the subreddit where they've put all of the feedback posts and now been... So basically, every week, someone will whinge about Boyd spoiling something. Literally every single week on the subreddit.
Proud.
Someone was... And the most recent one was genuinely someone was upset because they thought you had spoiled... The Don't Laugh show. Last One Laughing. They thought, even though you hadn't seen the end of it, they thought you'd ruined that. So that was a thread on the subreddit. And so
someone else said that to me verbally today. Thought that I think it was you that, because have you watched the whole thing?
No.
Did you? Someone said that we'd ruined who got to the final, but I had no idea.
And you hadn't seen the final.
I think you were just flagging your favourites, I think.
Well, anyway, so there was that. There was a whole thread about how they thought you'd ruined Adolescence as well. It's become a thing. So essentially now it's all been centralised into one main complaint thread, which of course
is. What am I getting slagged off? Is
the bane of
it's
my
what
life.
He's limbering up for.
But the point of this is that someone, the most recent mention that I saw on there, was saying, I don't see the value of telling us that you've seen a thing but you can't say what it is, or that you've seen a thing but you can't tell us what you think about it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's infuriating. We've known this for
presumably
years.
We are now banned from doing that. But the problem with that is, like, for example, this week, if I adhere to those rules, when you ask me what I've been watching, the answer will be nothing.
Yeah. And I understand the frustration because I've mentioned it before. I think it's ridiculous.
But if we have only been watching things that are embargoed, it becomes a very short segment otherwise.
Yeah, and also the other thing I'd say in my defence in this case is that I'm also flagging that this drama is coming up and the channel. So it is.
Yeah, there's a difference between you saying I'm watching this show, blah, 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 and saying roughly saying what it's about.
Yeah.
And you,
me?
Particularly,
me?
Going, yeah, I've watched a thing, but I can't say what it is, and I've watched all 10 episodes, but I can't say what it is.
No,
or what channel it's on or anything.
It goes like this.
That's different.
I've watched something. I got it in advance, much more advanced than Boyd.
Yeah.
I've watched all of it. I spent all my time doing it. I'm interviewing someone really great connected to it, but I just
can't
say.
And by the way, within
seconds.
Well,
when you put it like that.
Yeah, and by the way, when challenged within seconds, capitulating and telling us anyway.
Oh, yeah.
That's generally what happens.
I feel attacked.
That's what happened on Pilot Plus.
Well, apparently I'm the main victim of the Reddit. This is why I can't look at the Reddit. The
That's thing. Why I don't go on.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, if you did look at the Reddit, you'd just spoil it for someone else. So
very good. There you go.
Anyway, so I watched that. I also watched The Feud, which is a Channel 5 drama, which I watched for Boyd because I was previewing the show. And I have to say, I think it's one of the better ones this year. One of their best ones, in fact. It's got a great cast. Rupert Penry-Jones.
Not embargoed, I'm assuming.
No, don't think so.
Okay.
No.
Chris Gascoigne.
It was put back a week.
Also, I don't think it's a spoiler to say who's in it. I mean, that's not embargoed.
It'll be one of the possibilities for review next week. You'll be excited to know.
Hooray!
James.
Jill Halfpenny, Tessa Peake-Jones.
Jill Halfpenny, the staunch Channel 5, or 5 as it's known now, drama star.
Yeah.
She's
you
there.
And 5.
She's the face of 5 drama.
Yes.
She must be on a retainer.
So you and 5. Yeah.
and basically it's about a couple who decide to do an extension, and it stirs up all kinds of issues and ill feeling.
They decide to do an extension. Oh my God. Yeah. This is the most NIMBY drama.
It's brilliant. No. Is it the extension from hell?
But everyone will relate to it.
Is it 2-story, 10 feet back?
It's neighbour issues, noise issues, build issues, all
light
the issues you
issues.
Have. James is being funny, but it's kind of all the issues he's had recently with his building work, you know, a little while back.
Yeah, so probably
Do you think I'll relate?
He'll hard relate, yeah. Might be a trauma watch for you. And then the other thing I've been watching, which I kind of thought, is there any point? Because Boyd's already spoiled it for me, but I watched Last One Laughing.
Of course he has.
I'm joking. He didn't spoil it.
And it has. You are right, though. It has become a phenomenon, in part because it is advertised everywhere. It's on every fucking bus. Everyone is talking about the show. I didn't realise that this show was like an import. It was an import from overseas, wasn't it? So they've done
iterations.
Amazon Prime Video. And the reason why I watched it, well, I'd seen some clips, to be fair, and Danny Dyer was on it.
Because I recommended it.
And
spoiled it.
Listen, I was getting to that. Right. give me my moment to give you some credit. It's rare. Yeah, and because Boyd mentioned it last week. So, oh my God, it's so good. And it's, James, I think even you will find it funny. A lot of people have asked for you to watch it. We're going to do it on Pilot Plus.
Well, once we finish White Lotus, we'll do a do something on this.
It is great. It gives me so much joy. And my favourites, well, I really like Joe Wilkinson, Daisy May Cooper, but my favourites have to be the standouts, Richard Ayoade and Bob Mortimer. I think they're fantastic. But not only is it funny, it's introduced me to a new, like some new comedians that I didn't actually know. I mean, that's my bad, but I really like particularly Lou Sanders. She's quite the revelation.
Oh, she's great. Yeah,
yeah.
She's
I want to see her now in stand up. Yeah.
So. See, my concern is that I won't find them funny, and therefore,
well, then you'll win.
Well, I would win, but obviously I'm not a contestant. The humor, because Bob Mortimer and Richard Ayoade are two comedians whose humor doesn't necessarily gel with me. As a rule.
Who are comedians whose humour does gel with you?
Oh, that's a good question. So my go-to stand-up, the great Bill Hicks. Love the great Bill Hicks. He's dead, so I don't see him regularly.
Any living ones?
Bill Bailey. I like Bill Bailey.
There's one called Bill now.
Dylan Moran. Big fan of Dylan Moran as well. Those are really the ones I've seen live. Famously, and Chris calls me out for this a lot. I went
Chris
to see
Hewitt, host of the
Chris
Empire
Hewitt,
podcast.
Host the Empire podcast. I went to see Billy Connolly once and walked out at the halfway point.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I was unamused.
How old were you?
It must have been...
recently?
15 years ago, I would say 15 years ago,
okay.
I think.
Yeah. So you were like a grown adult.
A grown adult.
And you couldn't cope with
no
Billy
sense
Connolly.
Of humour. Yeah.
Famously, I would say Billy Connolly is probably the most admired stand-up of our time. Like, generally, people like Ricky Gervais credits him with a huge influence, and, you know, all the Python people and such. He's definitely, I would say he's the most
admired. I didn't have the best time, it has to be
not
said.
For James. Not
I mean,
for
I didn't have to go all the way to Hammersmith to see it. That probably didn't happen.
I thought you were going to say Glasgow or Edinburgh.
No, I had to go to the Hammersmith
to
Hollow.
London.
Yeah. To be fair to James, that would put anyone in a bad mood.
Yeah.
Jesus wept. That's wow, okay.
Yeah.
So mostly late comedians and people called Bill.
Yeah.
That's what we deduced.
Basically that.
Okay, fine.
Well, we are going to review it on Pilot Plus and I think it'll be fun.
Okay, fabulous. What have you been watching?
Well, it's been a busy week. So I watched Black Mirror, which is heavily embargoed.
So you can't talk about it?
Can't talk about
Awkward.
It.
Awkward.
But you know what? They kept secret even like what the episode titles and the stars.
Well,
yeah,
less so now.
Less so now. So I watched all six because I interviewed Charlie Brooker and Jessica Rose, who's the executive producer for a future podcast next week's podcast. I watched all six episodes, heavily embargoed. Can't talk about them.
But, so smug.
Yeah, that is part of the. this is a whole smug. Kind of
It's a smug off themed.
What have I been watching? Segment this week, but there are two of them are things that I can say factually. Two of them are like feature length, which I consider to be extraordinary. You know, because it's only a couple of years ago. The previous,
please, not the first one.
Not the first one. No, not the first one. Among the people involved are Rashida Jones and Chris O'Dowd, starring kind of what the first one, Common People. Bette Noir stars Sienna Kelly and Rosie McEwen, and that's a really chilling one, is all I'm going to say. It's set in a chocolate company, though. There you go. Something to look forward to. Hotel Reverie is really interesting. That stars Issa Rae and Emma Corrin and Awkwafina and Harriet Walker, star-studded or what. And that's about, well, I can say that's about the idea that people could jump into an old film, like an old movie, and live within it, if you
so
like.
So it's basically the Red Dwarf episode Time Slides.
Well, it's basically also the Woody Allen film The Purple Rose of Cairo.
Well, that might have been a better reference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's really interesting. Then you've got Plaything, which Peter Capaldi in it, and Will Poulter pops up in that as well. And that's a very, you'll like that
now,
one.
Now, I'm going to ask a question.
Yes.
Now, is what you are currently doing now something that listeners could consider? Basically, am I going to be reading a thread this time next week where people are going to be screaming and furious that you've given away who's in the episodes?
No, because this has officially been announced by Black Mirror.
Okay, do you hear that, listeners? There's an amnesty for Boyd here. Do not at him for spoilers.
Yeah, this is all information that's out there now.
I think we have
publicly.
To be allowed to deal in facts.
Yeah, exactly.
They're out there.
Thank you, Kay. But there's a video game based one, so I think you're going to really enjoy.
Well, and the spaceship's back, isn't it? The Callisto, it's called.
Nearly there. Eulogy is Paul Giamatti. Extraordinary. That's really interesting. He can walk into photos in that one.
Hang on, that literally is Time Slides from Red Dwarf.
Oh, okay. Well, I have no idea what Time Slides from Red Dwarf is, but it sounds interesting.
Oh, boy.
If only I'd seen that, I could have asked Charlie about it.
You could.
And USS Callister, the sequel, is there, yes, which is 90 minutes. It's basically a film. It's USS Callister, Into Infinity, it's called, with Christine Milioti from the original back in that. So that's kind of the general lineup. And it's really interesting, yeah.
Do you know who else has been on Black Mirror?
Go on.
My close personal friend, John Hamm.
Yes, he was.
All roads lead back to him.
Yeah. And a really good episode as well, by the way. The other thing I should say that happened in this, when I sat down to speak to Charlie Brooker and Jessica together. So I was in the hotel, and Jessica went for a break, and so I was just like, you know, chewing the fat with Charlie Brooker while we were waiting
to
come back.
Asking him to leave a 5-star review.
So Charlie Brooker is absolutely a lovely guy. He goes, so we're kind of, you know, just small talking basically. And then he goes, so do you want a cookie? There's a lovely plate of cookies. And he offered me a plate of cookies. And I thought, well, yeah, well, I might as well have a chocolate chip cookie. And I started to eat it, and it was delicious. And then Jessica came in, arrived from her break, and I had to do, and I was there, right now go to do the interview, which was being, you know, recorded by them in a drunken situation. And then I basically ended up holding this half-eaten cookie.
How did you not stuff it in your mouth immediately?
No. See, I wouldn't have done that, because that's then really awkward as he's trying to... But why didn't you just put it down on the side?
Because I was holding my iPad in one hand.
Yeah, and with the other hand, put it down.
There was no way to put it, so I put it on the floor, on the carpet.
Put it on your knee or something.
Yeah, you could have seen, this is interesting. Psychological study that Boydie held on to the melting cookie and got it all over his hands. Kay would have just sort of awkwardly but politely put it on her knee, and I would have just stuffed it in my face. And I think this says everything you need to know about all three of us.
It really does.
That is
I would
true.
Rather stain my clothing than hold it in my
true.
Hand.
Yeah. I just won't be denied my cookie. Yeah. That's exactly it. Yeah.
Cookie Monster James would have eaten it.
100%. The next infuriating screening I went to was Doctor Who, which was screened on Monday, and that is heavily embargoed to review. Annoyingly, the night we come out, so the reason we're not reviewing it this week, listeners, when it's out next Saturday, so it is in the week we're covering now, is because the embargo, and I don't know why, is 8 p.m. on Monday, the Monday coming, and obviously we come out what time? 8 a.m.
5 p.m. for the regulars,
for the regs,
and midnight. For there you the go. Plus
well, yeah. Can you tell us anything? Was there a good Q&A? Good snacks?
There was a good Q&A hosted by Clara Amfo, who's a delight.
Right.
Absolutely brilliant. And everyone was there. All the new people were there. There's a new companion to meet, and it was very interesting. But what I was going to say is this: this is going to be annoying for all listeners. But I'm going to say it anyway.
Oh my God!
It's very provocative.
This genuinely happened. They played the episode,
the first episode.
Then they played the trailer for the whole series, a new trailer for the whole series. There's a trailer for the series which is out there now that anyone can see, which is great. And they played a new trailer, and it included a scene. This is all I'm going to say. It included a scene that got me so excited. I thought it was so intriguing and fascinating that I had to say to Russell T. Davies afterwards, because that drinks
of clang. Oh my God. That was the most lovely thing ever.
Am I the smug one? Can I just ask that question?
No, on this occasion. I'm giving your crown to Boyd.
Of course, I'm a smug name dropper.
And I just had to say to Russell T. Davies.
I mean, my close personal friend Russell was there. And
I was like, that really was an amazing moment. He's like, oh, I know. And I'm not going to tell you anything else about it. Like, you just have to wait. Yeah. No one can talk about what we saw in the trailer. Right? So the trailer was embargoed. So the trailer itself was embargoed, but you know, and so yeah. But it was very, very exciting. Is all I would say.
I've gone from defending us to now being one of those people who are like.
Kay's going straight into the subreddit. It's not a thread about you.
Yeah, fair enough. I can't complain about.
I'm going to be a.
But you know, do Ryland's in an episode coming out?
Yeah. That's exciting.
It's exciting.
I love Ryland.
Yeah, everyone loves Ryland except for James.
I know who he is. I did a Sky quiz. A movie quiz, and Ryland hosted it, and that was my first introduction into who Ryland was.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yep.
Did you speak to him?
No.
Oh, okay.
Fine. But we didn't win, so I hold him fully responsible.
I finished the studio. I haven't finished it yet.
Oh
my God, it's
wonderful, but I haven't finished
it. It's so fantastic. But what I would say is, I loved every episode. Every episode is fabulous. But I had to go back and watch the second episode, because the one, as it's called, is...
There's a whole behind the scenesy type thing on YouTube showing you basically they've got a camera behind the camera so you can see when they attach the camera to the bonnet of the car and all that stuff. It's great.
I think it's one of the greatest episodes of TV. I've watched it three times.
Boy, he's like, forget Adolescence. This is the one right here.
Adolescence is obviously it, but it is, that's what I was going to say, it's the comedic equivalent of Adolescence, not because it is in a one shot and it is brilliantly done and ambitious. There's so much going on in it, but it's also hilariously funny. There's certain moments in it that make me laugh, crack up time and again each time I've watched them.
God, his eyes are lit up.
Yeah, so that's why I had to watch it, because I was, you know, like, if you're in an even vaguely, not bad mood, but, you know, I want to watch, if it's going to be one of my go-to TV episodes of all time, which if you're
wow.
in
a
bad mood. Yeah, if you're
that's
a bit
a hell of a claim.
If you're a bit sad or miserable, watching that episode will cheer you up, because there's a slapstick moment in the middle of it.
Yeah, it is cringe, but it is gently cringe. Like, it's not acutely awkwardly cringe.
No,
it's quite good-naturedly cringe.
Good-natured. That's the word. Yeah, exactly. And there's that slapstick moment in it. There's a couple of slapstick moments in it, actually, that are just so brilliantly done and timed.
Ruin it for our listeners.
No. I'm not. Too trying to set me up to be Reddit.
You're Boyd-baiting right now.
I am.
Yeah.
It's true.
I mean, I feel scared enough just saying the slapstick moments in it now.
Yeah, Boyd, I think you find that they were going in not expecting slapstick, and you have now ruined the surprise.
Exactly. But also, kudos to Sarah Polley, who plays herself as
Polley. Sarah Polley?
Polley? Polly?
Yeah, Sarah Polley.
Oh, I think it might be Polley.
Pretty sure it's not.
Okay. She's so good in it. She's absolutely brilliant. Obviously, she used to be an actress anyway.
She did. I interviewed her for Me Without You many, many years ago.
There you go. You probably
No, My Life Without Me, not Me Without You. Me Without You is
I mean,
a bit.
Can I say something? That's the irony of you getting that wrong, having corrected Boyd, is not lost on me or
thank
anyone.
You. Yeah, this thank is, you.
You're like the Chuckle Brothers to me.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, in many ways. To me, to you.
Russell T. Davis, who of course used to write for the Chuckle Brothers, so it all comes full circle.
Oh my God, did he?
Yes, he did.
Yeah. There you go.
This is why people tune in.
100%. She is phenomenal, isn't she? Like, she's so good in it. I'm nearly finished now. Two more things to mention. Sorry.
Have you done anything else but watch TV?
No, that's my job, Kate. Fucking hell, didn't you ever go me as well? Launch another Reddit campaign.
I'm marveling. I'm marveling at you.
The Righteous Gemstones keeps.
Oh yeah.
The episode that dropped this week, which is where they go on a kind of family vacation thing, to this kind of lakeside retreat, which Walton Goggins' character owns. The opening sequence of this episode is him naked, nude water skiing. They've really leaning into his genitals. His presumably fake genitals. So if you thought you'd already seen enough male nudity, as it's become a theme recently in both The White Lotus and him showing his
thankfully not this podcast
presumably fake penis in an earlier episode, they're really leaning into it in this episode. Oh my God, it's full on, and he throws himself into it in an extraordinary degree. And then there's this climactic scene in that most recent episode, which is absolutely extraordinary.
I hope he's got sunscreen on.
And not involving him, the climate screen, by the way. Oh, yes, I mean, but he's kind of showing off. He's literally there, whole naked. So unless they're kind of like created a bodysuit for him, he's definitely letting most things hang out, if not his actual.
Yeah. But I mean, delicate bits which
genitals.
Need to be protected in the sun.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. So that's extraordinary. The currency is the Righteous Gemstones, and finally. I want to mention a very much a reality show, which is on Netflix. It's a reality competition show, which is very, very Traitors-esque, and it's called Million Dollar Secret. Have you heard of it, Kay?
No. What's that?
It's basically like, do you know the Fortune Hotel? Do you remember that ITV thing? Stephen Mangan hosts it, whereby all these contestants, normies, went to a hotel. They're each given a suitcase, and one of the suitcases contained $250,000. And if, you know, they tried to keep it, if they managed to kind of convince everyone they didn't have it, they weren't the owners of it, then they'd win the money. Well, it's pretty much very, very similar format, this show, Million Dollar Secret. So, it's an American show. 12 random Americans arrive in this lakeside place, and they're given a wooden box each, and one of the wooden boxes contains $1 million. And if they somehow manage to convince the rest of them, of the contestants, that they haven't got that money, then they get to keep it at the end of the show. So it's a traitor's-esque thing.
That's quite good.
And they do tasks where they're trying to, they have to do tasks where they're told to do something, and they have to kind of fool the rest of the people. But the main reason I watched it, and it is an extraordinary thing, is it's hosted by Peter Serafinowicz. Now, do you know Peter? You know,
yes.
No, yeah. Peter Serafinowicz.
Dwayne Benzie.
Thank you. Is one of the funniest, most talented, most kind of off-kilter comedic
Yes, and the voice of Darth Maul.
And the voice of Darth Maul, among many other things. Most recently in Amanda Land. He's a brilliant comedic actor. If you look up on YouTube, there's brilliant. He used to have a sketch, his own sketch show on BBC Two, which was genius. And he did like the Michael Caine impersonations of Michael Caine's acting masterclasses. He is fucking, and he's created the fictional character Brian Butterworth, who is a sensation. Who I saw live last year. Chris Hewitt's a big fan, in fact, of Brian Butterworth because he's like a spoof and business guru type. He's like Alan Sugar if it all went horribly wrong, and he's hilarious. And he is the host, madly, brilliantly, of this show. And I guess it's
why?
A bit like
just a lot.
Well, if you think of Alan Cumming, you think like Alan Cumming hosts the American Traitors, right? It's a bit like that. So it's like, you know, America, the producers of American Traitors randomly booked a Scottish actor, comedic, kind of, but not always actor in terms of him, to host the Traitors US. So clearly the producers of this show have gone, should we get someone a bit like Alan Cumming? And they've gone for Peter Serafinowicz. And he treats the whole thing with like an arch eyebrow raised anyway.
Very Cumming-esque.
Very Cumming, but he's way better than Cumming. He is. Cumming's fine. But Cumming's no Claudia.
No.
Whereas Peter Serafinowicz is kind of a bit Claudia. And funnier than Cumming, and he is, it's amazing. So yeah, his casting alone is reason enough to check out Million Dollar Secret right now on the Netflix. And that concludes my what have you been watching.
And it's the end of the podcast.
25 minutes into the podcast, we finally found out what boy he's been watching.
Yeah. People want to know.
Oh, you know.
People want
deal
to
with
know.
It.
Okay, well,
deal
I've
with
only been
Reddit
watching.
Fans.
Yeah, that's it. There's going to be a thread about this. Boyd is talking too much.
Fans, frenemies.
I've only seen three things this week. I have watched the whole of The Last of Us, and I can talk about this because The Last of Us embargo has actually lifted by the time this podcast goes out. We're not reviewing it this week. We're going to review it next week, but the embargo has lifted. But the question is, do I tell you what I thought about it, thus violating the first rule of the podcast where we're not allowed to tell each other what we think of shows?
I think not. I think just say you've seen it and that's it.
James, well, we know what you think of it.
I think that's fair. I don't think it's a spoiler
it's
to
like
say.
It's not a mystery.
It's not a mystery.
No.
My feelings on this, someone asked me, said, what do you think of it? And I just said, 5 stars, no notes. And that is exactly how I feel about The Last of Us
season 2. Is that your
2.
Official review in Empire magazine? It's going to be.
It actually is our official review in Empire magazine. I didn't write it, but yes. We gave it a 5-star review. It is my show of the year so far, and indeed my show of the year at the end of the year, and my show of the year full stop. I'm so already annoying. Putting it in at number one because it's magnificent.
Can I just say that? So you see the whole thing.
Yes.
Right? I know you're conducting your own like spoiler special interviews with all these people, aren't you, for it coming up?
Well, I'm trying. I've put in requests.
I politely asked the people involved to if I could see the new series.
Yes.
And get screeners for it. And they told me in no uncertain terms that yes, I can, but only the first episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
So I'm literally being treated as second class.
That's
citizen,
right. Yeah.
And when it comes to The Last of Us.
I'm not going to say if we could. I'm so professional.
I'm not going to let it affect my review when it comes.
No, of course. And I was going to say, actually, I was going to organise a group prayer for you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank so if all the listeners want to gather at 8 o'clock. Yeah.
I was actually going to say to you guys, I would like you to watch more than one if you can.
Well, we can't.
But you literally can't.
Unfortunately. Yeah, apparently.
With our.
I mean, okay, you were never going to, but I was going to hope that Boydie would watch more than one. Because
I mean,
there are things
he can't get access.
He literally can't.
He
literally can't.
That is the situation. If you use your powers to, you know, apparently that you have.
Oh, he's feeling a bit
special. I'm feeling a bit smug. Feeling a bit smug, but I'm not going to say anything about it. I'm not going to lord it over you, Boydie, that I've seen all 7 episodes of The Last of Us season 2. Seven.
Is that all?
7 episodes. Only 7. It's a shorter season this year.
Oh, that's
Boyd, I wouldn't start quibbling about that. You haven't seen the second one.
Yeah, I was about to say 7, 8, 9, 10. You've still only got one.
I haven't even got that one yet either, by the way. Yeah.
Anyway, that is The Last of Us season 2 show of the year. It's fabulous. And I've been enjoying it an awful lot. The other thing I've been watching is Andor season 2, which is another contender for, I should say, it was always on my list of what would be a contender for season 2. That is embargoed. I cannot tell you what I think of that because it's not out for a little while yet. But we will discuss that in
due course.
You'd
be thrilled to know I have got those episodes.
You have?
Yes.
Have you been watching them?
Not yet.
No. Okay.
I've had a busy week.
Yeah, you have had a busy week.
Thank you very much.
It is true. But they gave me all the episodes of Andor as well, which I wasn't expecting.
I mean, come on. Now you're self-parodying. I got all of them. I
did get all of them.
When you say all, it's the way you said all.
It's like literally straining his eyeballs.
No, but the reason I mention that is so Andor's an interesting one because it's dropping in. It's similar to the first one. It's split into acts. So it's split into four three-episode segments, and they are dropping 3 episodes a week. So each segment will drop each week.
So, have you
so
seen
really,
three?
So no, I've got all of them. I've seen five. I have seen all of them. I'm on episode five. I've seen five. But what I'm saying is, really, to review it properly, we should watch the first three episodes
because that's what drops.
But are we even allowed to review it when everything Marvel or Star Wars related is immediately taken over by Empire anyway? So it's like
we're allowed to review it, yes. Okay. But we will. I think we're doing weekly spoiler specials on.
Of course, you know.
Yes, I know we are. We are absolutely going to do that. Yeah. So that's the other thing I've been watching. But as a result of watching so much Last of Us and Andor, I have not had time to watch
the previews. Bosch
Legacy. Right. And this is the thing that's been stressing me out. So this morning, I got up early and started the first episode of Bosch Legacy Season 3, which is the last season of Bosch Legacy, to get my Bosch on. And I genuinely thought this was beyond parody because I looked it up and the second episode of the third season of Bosch Legacy is literally called Boshing Bosch. And I was like, wow. Is that a joke? Is that? What is that?
It's got to be, isn't it?
It's called Boshing Bosch.
Incredible.
So, yeah.
Incredible.
It's nice to have Harry Bosch back in my life, but I've only watched a little bit of it, so there's not much I can tell you. But, you know,
I like Bosch. I'll have to add that to my...
Bish Bash Bosch. List. Boshing Bosch.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what I've been watching. And hopefully there will not be a complaint thread on the Reddit about that, because I was at least able to talk about The Last of Us.
I think what you need to do is stop looking at it.
You think?
Yeah, defo. Because you know that's going to marinate in your mind.
Luckily, I don't have to look at it because he keeps telling me fills me in on all the criticisms.
It's true. It is true.
Just for the record, I don't want to know. So never tell me.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't really want to know either, to be honest. But, you know, it's a bit late now.
All right, fair enough.
Feel bad for Boyd.
Okay, but you're not impressed that I managed to keep my Last of Us feedback quite brief, quite concise? You know, instead of spending 20 minutes...
All right, that's true. You're still talking about it now. And I feel like in about 20 minutes you'll still be mentioning it.
All right, should we have a listener question?
Yes, let's.
Please God.
This listener question comes from Remarkable Unit 2961. Very specific. who says, the final shot of season 2 of Severance was absolutely epic. What have been your most memorable final shots from TV series? Boyd, over to you.
well, the obvious answer that I always say in connection with half the questions has to be mentioned here, which is the OA.
But final shot.
Yeah, the final shot.
Like the last actual image.
Yes. It's incredible, of the OA, yeah.
Which is Paddy Gibson in the back of the van.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Spoiler for the OA.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. This is the most spoilery.
Yeah, I know.
Quite inherently. But that episode, to go back to the studio, there's a brilliant episode with Ron Howard where they go through every single twist, don't they? Have you seen that episode yet?
Yes, yes. Yeah. The Ron Howard episode is hilarious.
It's hilarious because they go through every twist in history and ruin it, basically, of every film you ever thought of as part of the whole storyline. Yeah. Anyway.
Based on your life, apparently, that episode.
Apparently so. I bet Reddit will be furious with them. Furious with the whole, or everyone involved. Ron Howard is going to get a major dissing. Anyway, so there's that, the OA. Also, and you will agree with this, you will remember the final moments of Better Call Saul.
Yes.
Where there's someone there, there's another character there, in a situation.
We should say for listeners that Boydie was initially more detailed.
Yes.
And thinking of the subreddit, we stopped it and said, please do not give away the end of Better Call Saul.
Let's keep it vague. Anyway, it is brilliant. That's all I can say.
Yes, and it looks lovely. And it involves a cigarette.
It involves a cigarette. Yeah. And then it also involves a look back as well.
It does.
There you go. Who can say? And finally, my final offering, and this is very topical, Mad Men. Do you remember the...
Starring my close personal friend, John Hamm.
Starring your close personal friend. And the final shot, I believe, is of him. This is not a spoiler. It's him sitting there, kind of in a yoga meditation stance. You know, when you sit cross-legged. And
Full lotus.
And I'd like to teach the world to sing. You remember the Coca-Cola song plays out. And the implication is he thought of that song as the ad legend that he was. And he's also achieving kind of... I don't care if this is a spoiler
anymore.
Absolutely
no point in me watching that.
Yeah, he's ruined the show. I'd never got to the end of Mad Men. Now I don't think I'll bother.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I wish I could tell John Hamm that before.
Yeah, that's true, James.
Yeah,
it's true. I did never get the end of it. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, well, anyway, that is a classic final shot.
I'm
not doing any more because of the spoilers. And James hasn't even researched it, and he's going to somehow come out as the Reddit hero.
No,
this whole conversation.
Do you know what? I was thinking about this because I was thinking very much about this because it's not a spoiler to say that this series of Severance ends on a freeze frame. So I very much had let that in, like the final, not like the final scene, but the final visual. And the only one I think of is, and I am going to my, you know, greatest hits here, is the final episode of The Shield, which I do maintain is one of, if not the greatest series finales of all time, when the lights go out. And what?
Kate just laughing at you.
What? What's funny? Go on.
No, no, no.
Go on. No, no, okay. No, but tell the class if you have something to say.
What? I looked annoyed when you said that.
Did he eye roll? Was it an eye roll? Was
it? No. Oh, I didn't think, didn't know I was eye rolling.
Sorry, carry on.
No. Yeah.
Well, I don't know what more to say. I wish I'd taken a picture of Boyd's face. We could just put it on subreddit. Wow. It's just because you, yeah, no, I'm excited for your passion. Carry on.
Okay. Yes, it's good. It's Vic Mackey. The lights go out. He's sitting at a desk. And it's just like, it is the perfect ending to a very morally complex show, which, you know, if you'd pin me down and force me to tell you how it would end, I would never have guessed that they would end it
Boy,
in such a clever way.
Boy, you take one arm off the next.
Fine, I quit this question.
It could be a whole new advantage for the YouTube watchers. Yeah, if we actually do pin
that's
you down.
Only fans. No, I was saying we would try and pin you down, so you could. Yeah. You have to decide. Yeah, that's
I thought you were just dragging me out of the room.
No.
Okay, you're actually going to pin me down.
No, we're actually pinning you down.
Okay, yeah. I see what you're saying.
Don't be like that. Mm. Now, listen, I chose two very old shows, so it wasn't spoiled.
Two, not one.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, apparently anything is a spoiler now, and even if it came out decades ago.
Friends, which is the door shot. They leave, and then the door with the frame, and that's the last shot.
Yeah, by the way, that's a good shot. David Schwimmer on the Matt Lucas David Williams podcast this week is very, very funny, very entertaining. All Friends fans should tune
in. Oh, really?
Yeah. The Schwim.
I'll check it out. And then, like, this one, maybe a little bit less memorable, but Sex and the City with Carrie walking down, I think it was Fifth Avenue, and her phone rings.
Yes.
And it's Big Calling, and we find out
and
his
name.
Yeah.
Which is
with her really
Clive.
Which is John, which is a great name. And yeah, she had her bejeweled, what was it, Nokia or whatever. It was that clamshell phone. Yeah.
That's a euphemism.
Wow. If it was a clamshell, it was almost certainly a Motorola StarTAC.
Yeah, I think I got that right. It wasn't a Nokia.
Yeah. Of course,
or a Razor.
Can't really talk about Big now, can we? Because it's been disgraced, so.
No.
Yeah, it's a shame.
It's Noth.
And it's Noth, exactly.
One of
my...
And that ends the listener question section.
Phew. Okay.
Phew.
We're done. We've moved on from the listener questions. What should we do now? Shall we have this week's guest?
Yes, let's.
My close personal friend. Yes, okay. So John Hamm, of course, needs no introduction, being the almost supernaturally handsome star of the likes of Fargo Season 5, The Morning Show Season 3, and a little show called Mad Men.
That you didn't
finish. That I didn't finish, in which he played Don Draper. And he's back on our tellies this week in Your Friends and Neighbours on Apple TV+, in which he plays Coop, a former hedge fund manager who loses his wife, his home, his job, his reputation, and turns to a life of petty larceny to mix things up by robbing the house of his super rich neighbours. I had a chat with John Hamm about the show, and this is what happened.
John,
hello.
Hey, how the devil are you?
James, I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I am very good, thank you very much.
I love Empire. There's a very famous picture of me in the Empire office pointing to a sticker on a copier
that says, I love Hamm. There absolutely is.
That was a very fun day.
I remember it well. Speaking of fun, though, I had a lot of fun with this show. I've devoured 7 episodes of this, primarily because that is all that Apple would give me. But I loved this, and part of it was I loved Coop as a character. And while I was watching this, the thing that I kept thinking about was something that Tom Hardy said when he was on our podcast last week. And I wondered if this resonated with you at all. So he said he doesn't like leading men, or rather traditional leading men, because he says they're boring and they become a conduit for plot, like things happen to them. And on the flip side, he was saying that if you have a character who is, in his words, morally wonky, they're inherently more fun because they're unpredictable. You never know what they'll do next. And I just wondered, is that something that rings true for you?
Well, that's, first of all, that's a tremendously eloquent way to put that. But yes, I think that we've established, you know, in kind of the golden age of television, that those characters became touchstones for some of the great shows that we look back on, whether it's The Sopranos or Mad Men or Breaking Bad or The Wire or fill in the blank. You can certainly, or Peaky Blinders with our boy. Yes, I think when you expect the lead character to go one way, and all of a sudden there's a whether it's a tonal or a moral or a narrative shift and something else happens, I think we find that compelling or at the very least surprising. If it's done clumsily, you know, maybe it's not as compelling to watch. But if it's done well, and I think we do it well on our show, it's a tremendously compelling watch, and it's entertaining. That's really what we're trying to do too. I'm sorry that your run ended on episode 7 because the last two episodes pay off all of the things that you've watched up to then. But the good news is you'll get those in due time, and then you'll also by that time probably have some of the second season to watch too. So that's good too.
Because it was recommissioned, right? Ahead of airing, which is fantastic.
We got picked up even before we got put on the air, which is a tremendous feather in our cap and also just an honor. But truly, what it is an opportunity to keep telling the story and to keep fleshing out Coop's life and the decisions he makes. And I've had the good fortune to read most of the second season, and I remain a fan of Mr. Tropper's writing because he's created in the second season an even richer kind of life for Coop to have to figure out.
Fantastic. I'm a big fan of Jonathan Tropper's work. See, Banshee, all of those shows. Love them. But it's interesting you said there about, you know, the validation of being renewed, because I remember reading back in the day that you used to read Basket of Kisses, you know, the Mad Men blog thing. And, you know, see the comments, see what people were saying about it, which is a lovely and yet I would have thought faintly terrifying thing to do. And I wondered, is that something you still do? Like read the comments, read the feedback, read the reviews. Is that not kind of a fraught practice?
Well, it's interesting because that was back in the days when the internet was a little more of a kinder, gentler place. That was sort of internet 1.0. And the blogs were a little more of a place, a true kind of way, interactive kind of chat board, message board kind of place, less about snarky, you know, mean-spirited things. And maybe we're getting back to that. I'm not sure. I check in on things when I don't necessarily read them about my stuff, but I'll give you an example. I just started, I'm not quite finished with it yet, but Adolescence. Oh, and so I really wanted to kind of see what the blogosphere was had to say about it, because it kind of pinned my ears back in a lot of ways. And I really wanted to see what other people thought too. I do have my kind of critical touchstones, Empire Magazine being one of them.
Thank you.
But there's certain writers, Alan Sepinwall, James Poniewozik, Matt Zollersites, Maureen Ryan. I really like what those guys have to say about current entertainment and television. But yeah, I don't know. I don't necessarily read the comments. I think that way lies insanity, but there be dragons maybe, but the actual people that put thought aforethought into it, I do like checking in with them just to kind of see what the mood of the room is, you know?
Yeah. Cuz I imagine it's quite difficult. This is a great show, but is it easy for you to tell when you've made a show, like, that you've hit a home run? Like, at what point do you allow yourself to say, do you know what, this is really good, I've made a great thing?
You all, obviously nobody goes up to bat hoping that they're gonna ground out to second base. You know, you really want, I don't know what the cricket analogy would be, but I, you know, you're always swinging for the fences, hopefully. And what you do, especially having executive producer, you know, status on this, is you kind of set the table in a way. Okay, I'm going to cast this person. I'm going to hire this director. I'm going to bring in these department heads. I'm going to make sure that I'm going to give this thing the best opportunity to be great. And then it's up to the world. I mean, at a certain point, it is sort of like letting your child into the world and saying, you know, go and find your way. I've done all I can do. But you do want to stack the deck in your favor as much as you can. That's why we hired Craig Gillespie, you know, to kind of direct the first two episodes to set the tone for the series. I knew, having worked with him on Million Dollar Arm, and I knew his work on I, Tonya, and I've been a friend of his ever since I worked with him. I knew that he has this ability to find the right amount of humor to where it doesn't become jokey or slapstick, and to find the right amount of drama to where it doesn't become you know, overwrought or this sort of melodramatic thing. I knew he would be able to really set the, you know, course in the right direction. And I think that's exactly what he did. And I love the tone of the show. It's got the right amount of ridiculousness and absurdity, as well as meaningful dramatic moments between people who are truly going through real difficult times in their lives.
Yeah, I was going to say, because the tone, you're right, it's great, because it's funny. It's got that dark thread of humor all the way through it. And look, I mean, look, you're a really funny guy. You've done everything from Bridesmaids. You played yourself in Curb. Sergio on SNL will always have a place in my heart.
Thank you.
You know, like Good Omens, Mean Girls, all this kind of stuff. And I wondered, like, is that thread of humor important to you? Because you clearly have an affinity for it.
Yeah. I mean, I like it. You know, I think humor is one of the things that we've evolved as human beings to manage difficulty, tragedy, you know, sadness, impossible times, when you look around and everything seems impossible or so challenging, sometimes just laughing is the best medicine. So yeah, I think it is important to have some measure of humor in every story. I think it just allows you to kind of reset your barometer or your internal kind of you know, whatever it is, metric to understand, okay, now let's get back into the story. Now we had to have that laugh to really then understand where we are. It doesn't excuse everything. It doesn't erase everything. It just resets everything in a really kind of cleansing way, I find.
It's like a pressure valve.
Exactly.
Back,
yeah.
To.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you have to fight to get comedy scripts when you were coming off the back of Mad Men? Because I imagine it's Hollywood being the way it is. You got a lot of very serious suit-based scripts.
Suits and cigarettes, for sure. And hats. I did. I honestly, and I give credit to Lorne Michaels really for allowing me to come and host Saturday Night Live for the first time in 2009, well into the run of the show for sure. But he was the one who kind of, his stamp of the imprimatur of SNL on my existence, and the fact that I went in there and succeeded, for want of a better word, that led to 30 Rock, which led to Bridesmaids, which led to this and that, Mean Girls and the other. And so that was a nice entree into that world for sure. And it was definitely a stamp of approval and one that I treasure to this day, and one that I'm fortunately going to get to go back to do in a couple of weeks. I'm hosting the April 12th show, which is very exciting for me and Lizzo. So I'm very much looking forward to getting back into 8H and doing that again.
Amazing. Amazing stuff. Oh, something I actually did want to mention. So my favorite TV show of all time, no disrespect to Mad Men, is The West Wing. And I remember reading that you had read for the part of Sam Seaborn in The West Wing. And by all accounts, an audition that went very well indeed. Was that a hard one to miss out on? Do you ever think about that?
I just remember reading that script, that pilot, and thinking, this is the best pilot I've ever read. And it was so well written. It was Aaron Sorkin. Aaron Sorkin hadn't really done a lot of stuff at that point. He had done A Few Good Men, but his tone and his writing hadn't really been established yet. So it was still kind of an outlier. And I just thought, wow, this is something brand new. Like this is gonna be amazing. And you saw who was attached to it with NBC and John Wells, and or not John Wells. Whoever was the showrunner, I can't remember who it was, but Aaron Sorkin and all these people that were running that show, and you thought, this is going to be a hit. And I did. I went in and I did my best, and I thought, man, I did that as good as I possibly can, and the feedback was great. They said, he's great. We love him. Rob Lowe's getting the part. Okay, that's fine. But then I read the pilot script for Mad Men some years later, and I thought, actually, this is the best pilot script that I've ever read. So the universe brought it back to me, and it worked out, and Rob got a great part, and I got a great part, and two great shows were created.
And so it was. And yeah, so it all worked out in the end.
Yes.
John, thank you very much for your time. It's been great to have you on the show.
My great pleasure. Thanks. Great talking with you.
That was John Hamm. Now, if you are wondering, this interview starts with him asking about a picture. So I mentioned, well, I came on, he saw James from Empire, and he was like, "Oh," he's like, "Empire." And he was mentioning a picture that was taken of him in the Empire office in 2013. We took a picture of him in the office when he came in for a web chat. And basically we had, for some reason, I don't know how it got there, there was a sticker on one of the desks that just said, "I love Hamm" on it. And so he knelt down and sat next to it and pointed to it. And for some reason, and this was 2013, 12 years later, he literally remembers having that picture taken and he brought it up. And I absolutely blew me away. I could not believe he remembered that.
Please put it on our socials so
I will. I will provide the picture on the social channels, and I'll put it on mine as well, of John Hamm with the "I love Hamm" sticker.
You Empire guys, you just make an impression.
We do. Mm. We do. We make an impression.
Did you get a picture of you and a new picture of you and him together?
No, because it was a Zoom interview. We were.
I see.
You know, we were together in spirit, not together in geography. Shall we move on to this week's news?
Please, God.
And there's been quite a lot happening this week, and some of it absolutely fucking wild. So, do we want to start with Killing Eve?
They're planning a prequel backstory series on the BBC.
That's right. Yes. Focusing on
what's her name?
Fiona Shaw's character. That's right. Yeah. Yes, this is Carolyn Martin's. She once saw a rat drinking a can of Coke. Mm. Both hands, quite extraordinary. Mm.
My favourite quote.
Yeah, everyone's favourite quote. it's an interesting idea.
I want a backstory on the rat and the Coca-Cola can.
What, a whole series just on the rat?
No, we incorporated in this new prequel.
Yeah.
It's called Honey.
Yes. No, it's. I like others, have slightly mixed feelings about prequel backstory type shows.
Pissing in the Pool.
And I definitely have an issue with that.
Some context for anyone who doesn't listen to the Empire podcast. My issue with prequels is that they can piss in the pool.
Yes.
Because a lot of people, like Helen, Chris mainly has said that if it happens beforehand, then it can't ruin the story because the story will always exist. And I'm like, well, no, it pisses in the pool. It taints it by association.
I'm not in the pissing in the pool group.
That's my personal kink, yes.
I do often find them clunky and annoying. Those types of shows/films that show the backstory of a much loved character, but for me, it doesn't ruin the actual thing itself at all. I don't give a shit about that. I just sometimes find them a bit clunky. But this has got all the talents involved that you'd want in terms of, I think, the original producers and all of that. So it's an exciting prospect.
Can you imagine if you had a prequel for this podcast? Boyd, Boyd and Terry originally, and then have a prequel to that and how it all came about.
We should make clear this is an origin story. It will not be Fiona Shaw playing the role.
No, of course. Yeah.
So it will be that character, a younger version of that character. But also, she's not like the most. I wouldn't say she's great in the show, but she's not like a much beloved fictional character. So I don't think there's a lot of pool pissing to be done. I think you've got a lot of freedom to do whatever you want.
Right, that's true. Yeah.
The only thing is, I would say the Killing Eve legacy is somewhat tarnished.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I agree with that, yeah. It was stretched, wasn't it? They
very much so. Well, it was that classic thing where it started brilliantly and got progressively worse as it went along. And then I think very few people actually finished the final season, so.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree.
Okay. What else has happened?
Well, I alluded to this earlier, the White Lotus story that's in Variety this week. That's fascinating. The headline is "White Lotus composer says he won't return for season 4."
This is Cristobal Tapia de Vere,
exactly,
who famously scored Dennis Kelly's original Utopia.
Yeah,
fantastic score that.
Yeah, he's brilliant. Yeah,
and he's one of the big stars of, I would say, this third season because his music is fantastic.
Well, that's what's interesting. So White Lotus composer says he won't return for season 4 after a creative clash with Mike White. "We've had our last fight forever," is the quote.
Ooh.
So, as you say, Cristobal Tapia de Vere, the acclaimed composer of HBO's The White Lotus, he won't be back for season 4. In an interview with the New York Times, the 3-time Emmy winner said he and creator Mike Wyatt had different visions for the show's theme song, which started in season 1 and intensified during production of the currently airing third season. Now, the reason I thought this was so interesting is when the series first started, everyone was going on about how they changed the theme tune and people were annoyed about it, including him, apparently. So he said, for the show's first two seasons, Tapio Devere's eerie theme song contributed to the show's unsettling atmosphere with strange sounds, including a recurring ooh-loo-loo-loo-loo chorus.
This was how did it go?
Ooh-loo-loo-loo. But the ooh-loo-loo-loos were cut for season three, igniting confusion. This season, the composer said White had in mind more of a background music type song that was more like you'd hear in Ibiza in some clubby place with a chill, sexy vibe.
What?
Yeah. Unfortunately, the theme song became more of a traditional lounge tune, says the composer, and that set them off against each other. So they had a big dispute.
I like the theme tune for this third season.
I think it, because it gets more and more mad.
I don't know. I do miss the original.
Well, see, I'm not particularly wedded to the original in that I genuinely don't know what it is because I don't remember it. But this one, I do think exactly for Boyd's, it starts out discordant and it gets progressively madder as it goes along. It works.
Here's another quote from I texted the producer, said the composer, and I told him that it would be great to, at least some point, give them the longer version with the ooh-loo-loo-loos because people will explode if they realise that it was going there anyway. I didn't like the full version builds up to that anyway, but Mike White didn't want
he cut the ooh loo loo loos from the new theme tune.
Yes, basically, Mike cut
he
them.
Should release his own version.
Yeah,
the ooh loo 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 cut.
But who knew? I think this whole thing, as we speak, when this goes out on Monday, the finale would have gone out. But everything about this show is news now. It's an absolute massive cultural phenomenon. But I thought that was so interesting because
it's interesting he's been so vocal.
Yeah, and he's been very vocal. Exactly. Yeah.
Wow. I'm going to give you some news, Kay.
Yes.
I'm sure you're going to get to this, but some Star Wars news. Tales of the Underworld. So following on from Tales of the...
City?
Yes, from Tales of the City.
Unexpected.
Tales of the Empire is where I was going. This is an animated Star Wars show. This is going to focus on underworld characters Cad Bane and Asajj Ventress, who you will, of course, know well from, I guess the Clone Wars, Rebels, those various things. But Ventress debuted in Genndy Tartakovsky's Clone Wars series. But this kind of reminds me of Ron D. Moore's Star Wars Underworld TV show that they did like 50 hours of. This is way back when, it's at the end of the noughties, and apparently they were massively expensive and they just got mothballed. They got completely shelved and they never actually finished them all. And yet they had tons of script, tons of it, but they were supposed to be very, very expensive. And the idea for that, I think they described it as Deadwood in space. It was very much focusing on the underworld of the Star Wars universe. But this, I mean, these are only shorts. These are short animations, but this is going to kind of cover similar territory. So, I don't know, if you're a Star Wars fan and you like animation, that might be a good one for you.
Like Kay.
Star Wars fan and a fan
it's
of animation.
My jam.
Well, anyway, so here's another bit of news for you. You remember Citadel, Amazon Citadel?
Yes, I do.
Which prompted Citadel Honey Bunny and Citadel, whatever the other one was, the Global Citadels, was reported to be the second most expensive TV show ever made. It's been put on hold. The Russo brothers have essentially paused the whole future of Citadel. The main one, we don't know what's happening with that. All of the franchises are at stake at the moment, so it could be the end of Citadel.
Tears
I'm not sad about
will flow.
It wasn't very good.
No.
It was the second most expensive TV show ever made, and it wasn't very good.
No.
I think it wasn't worth the money.
Definitely wasn't worth the money.
Do you like Dexter?
I do like Dexter. You know I like Dexter.
Okay, well.
Well, this is surprising news. Go on.
Yeah, Brian Lillis has been cast in a guest role.
Oh, that's I did not think that's what you were going to say.
Dexter Resurrection. Oh, I thought...
I thought you were going to say Dexter Original Sin, which also isn't very good, has been renewed for a second season.
Yes, exactly.
This is the Paddy Gibson prequel to Dexter, which we did not like.
It's surprising.
On any level. No. And it has been renewed.
It was a gutting disappointment because we love Patrick Gibson.
He's great. Paddy. Just this is not.
But yeah, it was. Maybe it's got better and better.
Maybe.
It's got to be some... It's done quite well. Clearly, Dexter's still a very popular franchise.
Okay.
But yeah, it was surprising news.
Okay, well, back to Dexter Resurrection. Brian Lillis will play Ryan, apparently, a guest staying at the Empire Hotel. James, you should do a feature on this. Go stay at, the fictional place yourself.
I would happily do that, yeah.
And he joins previously announced guest stars of David Dasmalchian, Neil Patrick Harris, Kristen Ritter, and Eric Stonestreet, who I love. So, yeah. I'm not a Dexter
from Modern
fan.
Family.
Yes, from Modern Family, Cam. But that is some Dexter resurrection news.
Here's what we've been talking about, the White Lotus. So Carrie Coon said something interesting. She was saying that her character in this was originally written to have a trans or non-binary child. Mm-hmm. And Mike White cut that story thread after Donald Trump was elected, which is, frankly, a slightly chilling reflection of the state of the world at the moment. But
this is all I'd say, though, about this story is this is from a wide-ranging Hollywood Reporter thing where they interview everyone involved in the show.
Right.
Mike White. And she didn't she talk about how there's discussions so that came out and her talking to her friends in the scenes where they're all chatting together, which is practically every scene in the show. And she says that's why, but he doesn't really. He doesn't get into it in the piece, like his explanation for why he kind of isn't in there. So, do you know what I mean? I think it could be, it's a bit Chinese whispers-y to me.
So, you're saying you don't think it's necessarily.
No, I don't think he hasn't gone, oh, Donald Trump's been elected, we can't talk about trans people anymore.
No,
I think it's that simple.
Anything, I think it would be more that if he would recognize that, it would then overshadow the whole show. Like, that would be the only conversation.
Well,
everyone would make it about that.
Yeah, indeed. And also, I think he does say at some point in the incredible, which is a brilliantly comprehensive article, by the way, because they literally into every single person, every cast member and him and the producers, etc. He does say there was loads of stuff he cut out. Loads and loads of stuff. Every
including
episode.
Including the ooh-loo-loo,
ooh-loo-loo. Apparently so. But even beyond the opening song, he cut out like half an hour of material pretty much in every episode. It's like every episode could have been.
Wow.
So, you know, it's not that. To me, it's like, I don't think we can blame him. I don't think the implication that he did it for those reasons is slightly misleading.
Okay.
Yeah,
so we're saying this is not in fact news.
I don't think it's news. The news is that from that whole thing, my main takeaway, as I tweeted yesterday when I'd read it, is that the finale, which will have gone out by now, is 90 minutes long.
Ooh.
Yes. That is the exciting thing. And that one cast member, and I can't remember which one in that piece also, said something like, no matter how much you think you know what happens, you will not get it. And I thought, that's a good quote. And that, that's really setting you up for like, ooh, wow, really?
Now,
okay.
Boy, don't start putting stuff on the
group. So what time are you going to bed then on the Sunday?
Well, I'm going to you until 3:30 in the morning. Yeah. Maybe I should do like a special. Let's all get up at 6 in the morning and do a special discussion of the finale. We should do it, yeah.
You know, okay, we should totally call Boyd early on Monday morning.
Awesome.
Wake him up.
I will 100% be calling you at 7 o'clock for a chit-chat.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Just to underline the phenomenon that is adolescence, the latest news on its ratings came out from Netflix, and it's now is dethroned Stranger Things season 3 and Bridgerton season 2 as Netflix's all-time and most popular TV show with 96.7 million views.
Where does that put it in relation to like your Squid Game?
It is the 9th most popular English language TV series of all time is what it says. They haven't compared to Squid Game because they're just looking at English language shows at the moment. But yeah, it's extraordinary. The absolute phenomenon, TV phenomenon of the year.
Yeah.
Even
our number two slot on the shows of the year.
The Last of Us. Oh, God.
Oh, it's going to be fun. We're doing our half year review in June. So, gloves off.
Big fallout.
Yeah, yeah. There'll be no more podcasts after that. We'll have all battled to the death. Shailene Woodley has joined Paradise for season 2. She's going to be playing a character in that. Remember? Well, I was about to remember what happened at the end of season 1, but clearly if I say that, there will be a Reddit thread about it, so I'm not going to do it. Tommy Flanagan, I love Tommy Flanagan from Sons of Anarchy, has joined House of the Dragon as Sir Roderick Dustin. Don't know who that character is, but he's a knight.
If you don't know who that character is, then who? No one's going to.
Well, I've not read Fire and Blood deliberately.
Maybe George R. R. Martin.
Yeah, well, I mean, he at this stage may not remember. Mm. And the other thing I was going to say is that Richard Chamberlain died.
He did, yeah.
Yeah, Richard Chamberlain is 90 years old. Obviously, Richard Chamberlain, Dr. Kildare, but the original Unjin in the original Shogun.
And the Thornbirds, yeah. But Shogun, he was very, very famous for, yeah. 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 I used to love him, actually. Even growing up, he was brilliant, yeah. Brilliant character actor.
I've got some cheerier news.
Cheerier news? Hit me with your cheerier news.
The BBC have announced the all-star cast of upcoming drama 2 weeks in August. Did you see this? So it is written and created by Catherine Shepherd and follows Zoe. Oh, right. She goes on a holiday with her family and friends to rediscover joy in her life. Can you imagine? Either of you? Mm. However,
there are more than three of them, at least.
Yeah, and it's not us, crucially. However, when Zoe begins to act out her deepest desires, the holiday she hopes for becomes a reckoning for a group of adults who refuse to grow up. Yes, family and friend drama on a holiday. What more can you want? I tell you what you could want. Jessica Raine as Zoe and Damon Maloney as her troubled husband, Dan. Plus Nicholas Pinnock as their friend, Solomon, and Antonia Thomas as his new wife, Jess. Plus there are other cast members, including Layla Farzad and Hugh Skinner as their university pals.
Nailed it.
Thank you.
It sounds like a British White Lotus, doesn't it?
Yes, that's what people are describing it as.
The red, white and blue lotus.
I don't think the BBC are displeased about that.
No. Absolutely not. No.
Yeah. No. I can't wait for it.
Not enough wizards for me. But other than that, sounds great. Are we done with news?
Yeah, I was going to do a thing about casting for Industry Season 4, but it's fine.
Oh, Cal Penn's going to be in it.
Yeah,
who else?
Cal Penn, Charlie Heaton from Stranger Things, Clef Ulani. The most interesting thing for me, the reason I was going to mention it, now I've mentioned it.
That's it. We're in now.
It can be the final story of news, is that they've announced loads of cast members for Industry Season 4. Clearly, it's going to broaden its scope, I think. That's what I'm deducing from all of these announcements, because there's just way more cast members. Max Minghella's in it, Kieran Shipko, Jack Farthing, Toheeb Jimo. So it's like seems to be like a whole new setting and a whole new bunch of characters.
They're working very hard, very industrious.
Alan Partridge is with us, is alive and well.
Just so that we don't end on that note, I've got to tell you something else.
Go on, please.
Let's end on a heart. Okay, all right.
Juno Temple, she's going to be in a new Apple TV series called The Husband. It's based on the best-selling novel by Holly Gramazio, and basically, Ted Lasso name, Juno. Juno is playing Lauren, who comes back to her flat in London and is greeted by her husband, Michael, only she's never seen him before in her life, right? Figure that out.
Okay.
So as she tries to work out how she can be married to someone who she can't remember, Michael goes to the loft. Well, they said attic, I'm converting it, to change a light bulb and abruptly disappears.
Hang on, who's changing light bulbs in the loft?
Well, you know, otherwise you're just moving around in the dark, and in his place,
such a mystery. No,
it was just that he went to the loft to change. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
In his place, a new husband emerges. So she realizes that in her attic, it's creating an infinite supply of husbands.
I'm already on board for this show.
Me too. And I'm also like, where can I get these damn light bulbs that are creating this situation?
Where can you get a magic husband loft?
So that's the Apple TV Juno Temple news.
Okay. What's it called?
It's called The Husbands.
Oh, not The Loft, which would have been a better
name. Or The Light Bulb, no. Yeah.
Husbands in the Loft.
Husbands in the Loft.
God, it's more light stories. You know, we're either big light and this is loft light.
Yeah, this is the loft light.
Yeah, apparently you can't even switch
on the light.
That's too mad.
Yeah, it is too mad. Okay. That's news. We're done. Thank God. Let's move on to this week's reviews. And first up this week, we shall have Your Friends and Neighbours, which you heard about already from John Hamm himself. But this also stars Olivia Munn, Hun Lee, Amanda Pete. It's a Jonathan Tropper show, yeti of Banshee fame, and it is about robbing your disgustingly rich friends. And who better to review this than our disgustingly rich friend, Boyd Hilton?
Terrible.
Bravo.
Oh, God. Bravo. Okay, it's got very excited all of a sudden. Yes. Now, here's the question for you. Here's the big issue of the week. Do you spell it with an O, or do you go OU? Neighbours.
Well, so this is an interesting point. When I interviewed my close personal friend, John Hamm.
Yeah, who hadn't seen the last season.
That's right, and didn't tell him I hadn't finished Mad Men.
No.
It said, Your Friends and Neighbours, ORS. Yes. And then I got a note through saying, do not download the video. We're in the process of changing it from ORS to OURS. They were changing it to UK spelling.
Oh,
but
my
I had
God.
Already downloaded it. So on our podcast, it has just the O.
Because I've written up as just the O. Because I was thinking, it's an American show.
Yeah, but so they've changed the spelling for the UK market. Yeah.
That's interesting.
No, I appreciate that attention to detail.
No, yeah,
I'm
glad.
Yeah, it's nice.
I'm glad.
Because films don't generally do that. When they use American spelling, they don't usually alter the spelling for the UK.
Exactly.
So it's quite nice.
They know the pedants on this podcast.
Yeah, that's right. They the people on Apple TV Plus, they need correct spelling.
Well, I've seen in all the TV listings, in the UK TV listings, they're just putting the U in as well.
Yes, so, but I think the U is the correct way of doing it. So if you've done that incorrectly in Heat Boyder, you have made a mistake.
I've done it incorrectly. Thank you very much. You'll be delighted to know. Go on about it in at your leisure. Anyway, this starts, as is tradition, on all Peak TV shows with a situation, a hardcore situation that John
cold open.
Cold open, lots of blood, and you don't really know what's going on, and seemingly a corpse, and then it flashes back. Wouldn't you know it? Months or even year, however long it is, I can't remember now. And to
four
a scene,
months earlier.
Oh, thank you. There you go. That's someone who takes notes.
My notes.
Yeah, the notes. And it all starts off with a very clever, I thought, if maybe slightly overlong scene in which he is confronted in a bar by a young woman, well, a young girl woman. Who works,
a young girl woman.
Yes. Because they're known, young lady.
Young lady, who works at the same company, not in the same department.
Yeah, he doesn't know her.
He doesn't know her, crucially. But she approaches him, he's on his own, glugging at the whiskey, and they have a kind of very flirty discussion. It also services very well as a narrative update to who he is,
yes,
and what situation he's in.
Yes.
He's split up from his wife.
I don't mind the exposition in this way.
Cunning expositions, because it is a really good scene, to be fair. So it's a well-written bit of exposition. He's in the middle of divorcing his wife. He's got two kids, one of whom wants drums for his birthday, which turns out to be quite an important plot point. His daughter clearly has very little time for him. His wife's got a hunky new partner.
Yeah.
He's like a basketball player.
Former
friend of Coop as well. Interestingly, it's called Coop because that's the name of the character in Interstellar. Of thingy's name.
Well, his name's Andrew Cooper.
I know, but I think that's quite
a common thing in America to abbreviate Cooper to
Coop.
Maybe
you're right.
Yeah.
Maybe you're right.
It's not a spin off of Interstellar. You're fine.
Okay. All right.
It's not a spin off of Hanging with Mr. Cooper either. Do you remember that kids' show? No.
Yeah. Well, I thought maybe it was a tribute to Interstellar, but no, clearly not. Anyway, we find out more about his situation. And then the whole kind of premise of the show is that, and the reason why that opening scene is there, the cold open with something's gone horribly wrong, is because he kind of, in an off-the-cuff moment, things are going really badly for him. He's having a really bad time with his family, with his profession, with his company and everything. And things are getting really bleak. He's at the end of his tether. He's going through a proper midlife crisis. So he suddenly decides, he lives in this extremely wealthy community of Westmont Village, which is presumably upper New York or Pennsylvania, somewhere in that.
It felt like that.
Because the office is in New York, but he's
Richville.
And there are these, I've been to these small towns, these communities, commuter belt kind of people. And they are extraordinary. I went to one once, which was dry, as in you weren't allowed to drink alcohol in it.
What?
Yeah. They have these weird local rules.
Was it Mormon?
No, it wasn't Mormon. It wasn't even Mormon. It was just one of those things
but
to keep
this
order.
Is a thing where you get American like residential developments. Yeah. They have weird bylaws,
yes,
and some of them are whack.
Exactly.
What,
if I can use that term, which I don't think I can because I've misused it again. But yes, fine.
How can they control what you have in your own house?
Well, they can. So you can have local bylaws, which can you can have laws on exactly the length that your grass has to be, things like that. Mm. And these are genuine things.
Exactly. Mm. Anyway, so he lives in one of
these
where everyone's really, really rich and have lavish houses and blah, blah, blah. And he suddenly decides, because he needs money and he's in a dire situation, that he's going to rob these people of their belongings and their money, etc. And that seems to be the starting off point of this whole show.
Because he knows they won't miss it.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, genuinely, that's the motivation.
Indeed, yeah. I thought this, I mean, as you said in your introduction to your interview with your new friend, John Hamm, even though you haven't seen the last season of Mad Men, is that he has done a lot of stuff. You know, it's not like he's wanted for work. I mean, but most of them have been kind of like supporting roles or guest starring roles, etc. This feels like, I think, off the top of my head, the first show that's completely all about
him. The first TV lead, I think, he's done since Mad Men.
I think so.
He's done, obviously, film stuff. He's interesting because his career choices have been very specific. Like, he's deliberately avoided a traditional kind of leading man type career path. I think he said before that the kind of actor he most wants to emulate career-wise is Jeff Goldblum.
Oh.
So I think he likes doing supporting roles and kind of crazy characters and things. So, but this is an interesting one because he is, as you say, he's a lead, but it's a slightly quirky role.
It is, yeah. So he's definitely kind of more, it's a kind of messier in terms of the character role. Because obviously the whole thing about Don Draper was that he was a persona that he'd created that was very like kind of stylish and controlled. And, this guy is the opposite of controlled, really. He's capable of punching, spoiler, someone in the face. He's capable of stealing this stuff from his neighbours. And I think it's all about how far he's got to in his life, where he's at the extreme end of behavior. And I think he sells it brilliantly. I mean, it is, you know, I think this could have been performed by lots of other actors who might have overdone the comedic. It's almost like there are comedic moments, I think, what, you know, with the drums, getting the drums for his kid and all of that.
The boyfriend.
The boyfriend, indeed. But he does. He judges it so well, I think, this character. And if I mean, I haven't read about it, I don't know whether what's his name wrote it especially with him in mind or whatever, I don't know. But it feels like it's very much like, oh, I'm gonna write this thing for John Hamm because he can do this brilliantly, and he does do it brilliantly. And I thought it was really interesting and intriguing, and I will carry on watching it. And beautifully made. Oh, it looks amazing as well, by the way, as Apple shows do.
I agree. I thought it was very funny and smart. I thought it was an interesting social commentary on wealth, privilege, excess, midlife crisis, masculinity, etc. But I just think Hamm is so supremely watchable. And, you know, he's perfect for this role because he's charismatic and charming and just believable as this guy who has enjoyed great wealth, lost it all, and is desperate to claw it back in whichever way possible, and is able to justify that to himself. Like, he's able to level that off as like, you know, these people are dicks and they won't miss it, so I'm going to do it. But just, I would say this show, and most importantly, John himself, he is a gourmet hamburger, right? It is.
The hamster.
Yeah, yeah. He is. He's so good in this. I really liked it. Yeah.
You could eat him up.
I could, and I am really angry that you didn't tell me that an interview was available with him.
Yes, we all are, Kay.
But side note, I never have to wonder what he looks like when he's pissing. How many times do we see it? I mean, fictionally, of course, you know, I'm sure.
But not in the interview. Like, that would,
no,
you know,
but
be awkward.
And also he was, you know, bare-chested a lot, which I wasn't displeased about, but it was also
so something for everyone is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, I got sucked down this particular rabbit hole. I watched the first episode of this a few weeks ago. I think I mentioned it on the podcast, and just tore through them. I've seen seven because I've only had seven made available to me. There are two more. There are nine in the season. But I really loved it. But what I think's so interesting about the show is the setup is that he is this rich guy, former hedge fund manager, who turns to a life of crime. And you think, okay, that's the meat of the show. It's not. And I think that's the least interesting part of the show, is that he's robbing his neighbours. And don't get me wrong, it's interesting in that it's stylized, it's clever, and they have this thing where he does this when he's stealing something, you see like a cross-section of the thing he's stealing and it kind of gets exploded out, and he does almost like a QVC fact file on the thing that he's stealing in a kind of wry comedy way, and it has this dark humour all the way through it. It's a lot of fun. But what's great about this is just watching this guy's life implode. And it's absolutely compelling. Like, he has hit rock bottom, but then the ongoing relationships he has with his children, that he has with his wife, Amanda Peet, that he has with Olivia Munn, who plays another sort of divorcee in his kind of community, with his ex-friend who is now, you know, who he caught sleeping with his wife and who is now married, or with his wife, not married, but they're together, and living in his house and using his expensive barbecue and all of these things. And it's like, he has this hangdog, slightly sarcastic, quite bitter, like, you know, when he's like, hey, if you need anything to do, and he's like, yeah, you know, if I meet anyone whose wife needs fucking, I'll let you know, Nick, the guy with his wife. And it's just, it's really funny, and it's full of pathos, and it's got lots of tragedy to it. And I found the relationships, and the fact that his financial manager, played by Hoon Lee, who's in everything Jonathan Tropper does, and who is amazing in everything, I was just totally captured by the characters and the relationships, and I really, really, really enjoyed it. And then the crime stuff, initially, I was a bit like, I'm not really that bothered by the crime stuff. As it happens, as it goes on, it becomes much more compelling.
I know what you mean.
But I was like, the character work is top notch,
particularly with Amanda Peet. I think.
Yeah, and yes, exactly that. The relationship he has with his ex-wife is gloriously spiky, but also kind of world weary, and there's a lot of resentment
pretty
there,
much
but
like
also
us, James.
Very much like us. Yeah. But it was very believable. It was very real. So yeah, I really got on with this show a lot. Yeah, lots of fun.
It's a yes from us.
Your Friends and Neighbours with you here in the UK, which is available on Apple TV Plus. When, Boydie?
Friday, the 11th of April, 2025.
Fabuloso. Next up, we have the fourth season of Hacks. What, you say the fourth season of Hacks? Didn't we just get season three like a day ago? Yes, yes, we did. You are not going mad, because this, for the first time, is Hacks landing here in the UK at the same time as it lands in the US, which is a rather delightful turn of events. Now, I would fill you in on what happened up until this point, but I'm not going to, because I feel a little bit like Kay did when she jumped into the Wheel of Time, in that I don't really know what's going on, because I don't keep up to date with the show. And frankly, I couldn't even tell who the good and the bad wizards were, so it was all very confusing. So, Kay, why don't you fill us in on Hacks season four?
Okay, so I'm actually not going to fill us in, because, well, I'm going to give a little overview, but it would be a spoiler.
Okay, yeah? No spoilers. So, don't want a Reddit thread in, Your Honour.
No, I'm going to say, first of all, I just really love this show, as does Boyd, I know. And when we pick up, so Deborah, played by Jean Smart, has got her dream late night chat show hosting gig, and she's over the moon, but it's come at a cost. And she is essentially like, cast aside Ava, who helped her get there, but they've made a very uneasy truce. And so now it's like we're watching how that all pans out, and it is horrendous. It's so awkward to watch, and also just awful to see how these two, who had been formerly very close, are at loggerheads, and the lows they will go to get one over the other and, you know, get each other back. So that is essentially what the first episode and this whole series is going to be about. And to be fair, I mean, while I find it quite devastating to watch, because I love, you know, I love that partnership and that dynamic between Deborah and Ava, I actually think Lucia and Yellow and Paul W. Downs and Jen Statsky couldn't do anything else with it. Do you know what I mean? They had to go down that route, I think, because, you know, you needed that epic level of conflict to upend Deborah's dream, essentially. So yeah, I've accepted it, but I do struggle to see them at each other's throats, even though it is entertaining and, like, for some of it is quite harsh. But for me, the episode is completely stolen, as always, by my favourite pairing, Jimmy, played by Paul W. Downs, and Kayla, played by Megan Stalter, who they're just so good together. I actually want a spin-off show with these two. I think it would be so good to see, like, a fly-on-the-wall cam of them in their office, you know, because Kayla's now a manager, even though she does not behave like that. She's out of control, and, like, she's brilliant. And, yeah, so...
And he is co-creator and writer of the show, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As listed.
Yes.
So... I absolutely love it.
Did you mention that before? Like, yeah. As listed.
Yes.
As you mentioned earlier.
So only because I was struggling with the names and I thought you would have picked up on it.
No. Yes. It is phenomenally good. Phenomenally good. I watched, famously, I watched the entirety of season three before it was available on Sky, before that deal had been done, on a flight back from America. It was one of the great flight back TV viewing experiences.
No raw dogging for Boydo.
Never any raw dogging for me, no. And the ramifications of what happened at the end of the previous season, I don't want to, I'd be the last person to spoil it by spelling out exactly what happened. But all you need to know is, I mean, I'd hope it's all available. All the episodes are available on Sky Catch Up anyway, so you haven't got any excuse, James, not to catch up with it in time for the start of this fourth season.
Because, well, some of us, unfortunately, Boydie, have all the episodes of The Last of Us, and, you know, it's,
yeah,
it makes it very difficult.
I just say something? I didn't look at my clock, but I did say 30 minutes later he would be mentioning it again.
Of course. But the sheer unbridled hatred is the situation at the start of this season.
Low thing. Unadulterated low.
Exactly.
Thing.
What's that from?
Wicked.
Oh, God. A camp review. That is the situation between Deborah and Ava is so brilliantly done. And it goes to such extremes, they do to each other in the first.
It's awful.
I've watched the first few episodes, and it is awful. And you're going to find, you may find it too cringeworthy to deal with, James, by warning. But it's just fantastic stuff. It really is. And I think that creative decision to make them put them at each other's throats in more than they ever have done in the previous three seasons of this show has been an absolute triumph, because it's so funny and it's so extreme, and they go further than you would imagine the way they treat each other. It's just brilliant. It's just, so that backdrop, but I agree with you about the agent characters. They're fantastic, incredibly entertaining when they decide to have opportunities for animals. it's just the, just really funny in the, what happens in their office. The whole thing is, it's really interesting that this show is arriving, the full season of this show is arriving just as we've had the studio, we've had the franchise. These are all shows that deal with show business and Hollywood and what goes on behind the scenes and agents and all of this stuff. But I think, and you might think, thank God someone hasn't gone, some executive hasn't gone, oh no, we've got too many of these shows, because I really like them all. Obviously, it's
no, they can't do that. That's like them coming for crime dramas.
Oh yeah, completely. But crime dramas have wide appeal to everyone, yeah, right? Yeah. You might consider, and people have said that they certainly said it at the franchise that these are too inside baseball and it's too indulgent. But Hacks gets the tone just right, because it's as much about this relationship, this extraordinary relationship between an older woman and a young woman, and the how that creativity works and all of that, as it is about the whole history, without wanting to get carried away, of American comedy. I mean, it is in a way, because she's such a Joan Rivers-esque figure. And also about this, in this series, about late night shows, there's references to James Corden's show. At one point, someone says, where's your carpool karaoke? I think it's in episode two, because they're trying to get the show going. And what's brilliant about it is that, at first I thought, well, because the whole thing about late night in America is late night is declining, you know. So when James Corden stopped doing the show, the late night show, they didn't replace it, haven't replaced him with another chat show. They replaced him with, and they allude to that in this show. It's so of now.
Oh, wow.
It's so current and kind of on it. They even, the explanation of why they're even booking her to do this late show is brilliantly relevant and topical and clever. But it's just, I just love it. It's just so well done. It's
is Caitlin Olsen in, because I've only watched the first episode. Is she in?
She's in the series, definitely. She's not in the first couple, but okay. She comes into it back. She
friend
comes
of
back.
The pod.
Yes, indeed. Your friend. As much as John Hamm is his friend. she's back, I think, in the middle of this season. I've watched the first two. But it's just so brilliantly done. It's brilliantly written. They're both fantastic. Everyone in it is fantastic. It's what a great time to be alive for fans of Hollywood insidery comedies, because with this and the studio, and I also like the franchise, but particularly this and the studio, they're absolutely fucking brilliant and all running at the same time, and it's a joy. And they might even have, because they have crossover real life people playing themselves in this show as well. You can imagine someone being in all of them. You know, it could happen. That's my challenge.
That'd be insane.
There could be some kind of crossover between all the shows.
Yeah, when Helen Hunt turned up in this, I wasn't sure if she was playing Helen Hunt initially.
Yeah. No, she's playing a really funny, ballsy executive. Yeah,
yeah.
The one who decides to hire her. Yeah. Yeah. She's done for a lot.
It's exceptionally well written.
Mm.
Like the barbs land perfectly. The performances, the two performances are on point. It is really good. Again, it's one of these things where I'm just like, oh God, I really do need to watch this show. Because I did like it, but I spent a lot of the first episode a little bit discombobulated because I have no idea why they fell out. So and that's not, there's no previously on Hacks at the beginning. It just goes straight into it.
I bet there will be when it ends.
Because I had no idea what the discord was between them.
That's interesting, but I would have thought that it helps to know that, but in a way, but you still, you're aware that I've had
I went with it because I've seen the first, few episodes of the first season, so I know how they got together and that they, I understand.
But you know, there's
that.
A massive conflict. That to me, that's the key crux of it.
They've fallen out. That's what you
mean. Yeah, they've fallen out.
And right. But it's almost like the why is less interesting than the how.
That's what I'm trying to say.
And the process of it and them sort of tit for tatting each other is genuinely hilarious. And how that first episode ends as well is, it's quite pointed. But yeah, it's really well written. It's really funny. It's a very good show. I don't know what else to say about it.
Listen, you've got some time off coming up.
Yeah.
I suggest you use it wisely.
Watch Hacks. I will definitely watch it at some point. And also, are there any like half-hour episodes? So
some
it's not
point,
like it's...
non-specific.
Yeah, it's on the sofa list is what I'm saying. It's on the sofa list. I won't say where, but it is on the sofa list.
Okay.
Hacks Season 4, available on Sky Max.
Friday, the 11th of April, 2025.
Hacks on Max.
Yeah.
Sky Max.
Yeah.
Sky Hacks.
You have to see it.
Quite why, by the way, it's on Sky Max and not Sky Comedy or Sky Atlantic is something only Sky can really explain, is all I would say. Sky Atlantic is the premium HBO-y one. This is a Max show, right?
Right.
They've got Sky Comedy that Curb was on, and you'd think that's the real confusion is it's not on Sky Comedy. That is weird to me. And Sky Max is its main one, where like A League of Their Own's on that. Mm. Like one of their
Robin,
so it is confusing. I just throw it out there. I'm just
Sky, defend yourselves.
Thank you. Yes,
Boyd is coming for you. Okay, finally this week, we have Reunion on BBC One, and this stars Matthew Gurney as Daniel Brennan. He's a deaf man who's just got out of prison after a 10-year stretch for a murder, and he's looking to reconnect with his estranged daughter and possibly dish out a little payback while he's at it. It co-stars Laura Peake, Amory Duff, Eddie Marsan is in this as well. It's written by William Major, and it is quite interestingly subtitled. No, I'm not going to go into a whole Shogun-esque thing about the subtitles, but it's interestingly subtitled because both the sign language sections and the spoken parts are subtitled, hard-coded, and subtitled in slightly different ways as well, which is good, because we should say the majority of the cast of this show is deaf. The majority of the crew, or at least some of the crew, are deaf as well, and it's very much set within the deaf community. Boydie, what did you think of Reunion?
I liked it. I thought it was really interesting. It is incredible to think how surprising and rare it is that there's a show which, as you say, is predominantly run and created by and starring deaf people, and to have British Sign Language as one of the main languages, so to speak, that's used in the dialogue throughout the show. It shouldn't be, but obviously it is incredibly, incredibly rare. But I think more importantly, the story works. So the story, you meet this guy, all you know is that he's killed someone in mysterious circumstances. There are kind of flashbacks that fill in bits and pieces of what he's done, but not
really.
No one seems to know why this deaf man who's ended up spending so long in prison and is coming out and is sick, trying to reunite with his daughter, and the victim's wife, played by Anne-Marie Duff, and daughter, played by Rose Ayling Ellis, are kind of still reeling from what he's done and how he's affected them and their family, etc. And that mystery is very well handled, I thought. You do really want to know. They kind of just drip kind of bits of information about him, and you get to see him how he is now. And he's clearly got anger issues, to say the very least. But fair enough. I mean,
he's been through some shit. It can be said. We see some sequences of his life in prison, yeah, and it wasn't the most fun.
Exactly.
Would not recommend.
No. He's treated really, really badly. But I thought it was really well handled. I thought the kind of direction was interesting. Luke Snellin, who's done a lot of really good, he's a very talented director. Just in terms of visually, it's kind of like moody and cinematic and kind of ambitious. It's got a whole ambitious kind of vibe to it. And he is fantastic, I think. The funny thing about him is, the show is in British Sign Language and it's subtitled and in English, etc. But he hardly says anything at all, like in any language. He just sits there, kind of like as an almost stoic figure, kind of with. And you're wondering what is going on.
He is a taciturn man. Yeah. Yes.
So they kind of the irony of the whole thing is they've got this is a show that is all about communication and different modes of communication. But he doesn't communicate, and that makes for kind of fascinating viewing. He's almost like the man with no name. He's almost like Clint Eastwood, in Unforgiven or something like that. Really well done. Everyone in it is really good. Always a treat to see Eddie Marsan as well. He pops up as the new boyfriend of the woman whose husband he killed, so to speak. And I think it's really interesting. Yeah, I'm on board.
I agree. I think it was a really interesting portrayal of what it is to be a deaf person in a hearing world. I think as a viewer, it made me think about what it must be like, from the small things like people talking to you, not realizing, to bigger aspects of the threats that you may face and you don't realize, the danger you could be in. Also people keeping things from you, which, you just don't, I think as a hearing person, you don't think about that at all. And I really liked how they used the silence and muffled noise to convey like what that experience can be like for them. But also like an interesting scene where he's in the car and I think he's feeling angry. He's like extreme motion and he blasts the music.
Yeah. Diesel Power by Prodigy.
Yeah. And then it cuts to him. He cannot hear, obviously, but he can feel the bass, and that's what is feeding. That's his consumption of music. It was
the bass line on the song is mad.
I thought it was. I thought the whole thing was fascinating. I found it a challenging watch because there's the violence in it, for example, and also
it's not super violent though, is it?
No, but there's some moments. And you know what it is? I think it's because it's violent to someone who's vulnerable as well. In the prison scenes as you're talking about and stuff like that. Yeah. It makes me uncomfortable.
There's definitely a power imbalance stuff going on.
But also, I really needed to concentrate concentrate on reading subtitles and working out what's going on and orientating myself in the story. And obviously that takes a lot of concentration, but actually I thought that's so immersive because that is what it must be like, you know, to constantly be on and focused. And yeah, so I thought it was really great. You know, it was great from that.
There's a really clever scene where characters are in a car and the phone goes and they listen to the message and obviously the other person doesn't hear the message. And that was really
so that's what I was alluding to when I said that you know, from the small ways of like people withholding secrets, just all, you know, you just don't think.
No, you're right. It's that I like that they have the sort of deaf POV bits where you understand what it is they can and can't hear in sequences. There's a bit where Rose Ailing Ellis's character, like not the bit in the car that you're talking about, where she kind of lies about what the voice message is, but it's a bit where she's talking to Eddie Marsan in the kitchen. And you see the point of view where we can't quite make out what's being said, which is, it was interesting. The thing that really got me is how much BSL I don't remember, because I used to be able to sign can't remember
when
so much of this. I learned to sign years and years and years ago. An ex of mine had a mother who was partially hearing, and so I learned to sign. I did a BSL course for months and months and months. So I used to, my signing was actually halfway decent. I remember being on a flight once and there was a guy and he apologised to me and he signed and I had a signed conversation with him on the plane. And I was like, I've forgotten so much of it because it's been so long since I've used it. So if you know another language, practice or you will forget. I thought it was great. I love the fact that it wasn't just that he's a deaf character, he's a deaf convict. It was that he's all the people he's communicating with are in the deaf community. Like, he goes to a birthday party, it's a deaf person's birthday, there are a lot of other deaf people there, and it's very much immersed in that culture. And I thought that was really nice. Like, it has an authenticity to it, which obviously helped a lot of deaf actors, deaf crew. And the deafness is a central part of it. It's not, I don't want to use the word gimmick, but you know what I mean? Like, it's not a throwaway thing.
No.
It's fundamentally woven into the DNA of this show. It is its identity. And when this first started, you know how I generally dislike subtitles? I was a bit like, how do I turn these off? How do I turn these off?
I did think of you. It's incredible how our minds are infested, isn't it? After years of listening to him go on about something. And the first thing I'm thinking of, rather than concentrating on the story, is, oh, how will James cope with these subtitles?
These are quite low in the frame, James. Likes them higher up.
I'm gonna be transparent and say, actually, when it came on, I did the same thing. Because we were watching our previews on on my laptop. And I thought,
I wasn't watching it on your laptop.
And I thought to myself, oh, well, I don't need it because, you know, so I will take them off.
Yeah.
Not realising.
And you got the hard-coded,
But As it should be.
And then you start to, and then the subtitles are a fundamental part of the show. Because as you said, there are extended conversations in BSL, like extending, which I think is fabulous. And I really liked it. And you felt a part of that world. So I thought actually it was really well done. Should the subtitles have been slightly higher in the frame and in a slightly different typeface? Possibly. But that's a minor criticism.
I'll tell you what's interesting is we've talked about this before, the phenomenon of young people watching everything with subtitles on. And at the aforementioned Doctor Who screening I went to, they had subtitles. The subtitles were on. And I think that's the first time I've been to a screening of a big show.
The Witcher. I went and saw The Witcher and they had the subtitles. I went to watch The Witcher and I was not happy.
No,
that was season 2 of The Witcher.
Wasn't that, hold up, but I had that experience as well. Wasn't that in like a small room at Netflix?
To be fair, this wasn't the big.
No, this was a huge big screening in Leicester Square.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, I've never seen that before.
Yeah, never seen it before.
And I'd have been furious.
They had a signer and they had subtitles. I think it's just how aware people are now that you have to, these things, to make things more accessible to everyone. So I think you're going to have more and more of it, is what I'm saying.
I will not put my needs above the needs of people who genuinely need subtitles.
Oh my gosh, that's a first.
No. It is extraordinary.
However, if they're just Gen Zers who want them on for the sake of it, I'm having none of it. But if, you know, people need subtitles, that's
how will you know which is which? I mean,
that's a fair point.
He will insist people.
Yeah, I'll interrogate the audience before it starts. Full interrogation.
Yes. Yeah, expect that.
Yes, reunion, where can people find this, Boydie?
It starts today, Monday, the 7th of April, and carries on Tuesday, and then back on Monday and Tuesday the following week. So it's basically on Mondays and Tuesdays from this week.
Thank you.
On BBC One and iPlayer. Monday the 7th and Tuesday the 8th of April, 2025, 9 p.m, BBC.
Thank you.
All right.
Boydie, what else is on? What have we missed?
Well, the aforementioned...
The Last of Us, the show of the year. You're absolutely right. We have. It's out on Sunday.
It's out on Sunday, 2 a.m.
on Sky Atlantic.
In the HBO 2 a.m. slot, the live as it goes out in America slot, that I will be consuming the White Lotus in. And
so what you're saying is you'll be watching The White Lotus and not, in fact, The Last of Us.
Well, because I haven't got the screeners yet. I mean, maybe I'll have to watch The Last of Us when that...
Well, anyway. This we should say, for the purposes of this podcast, we're considering it a Monday release and we're putting it into next week's show.
Exactly. As as we have done with The White Lotus.
Yeah.
Anyway, also out this week, Thursday, the 10th of April, on Netflix, Black Mirror, the aforementioned Black Mirror, all six brand new episodes, including two feature-length ones, drop.
And we'll be covering that on Pilot Plus.
We'll be covering that on Pilot Plus. And I interviewed Charlie Brooker, as previously aforementioned as well. I've never said the word aforementioned ever.
You can't stop.
No, maybe no one has in history within the space of a couple of hours. There is...
Good American Family is on Disney Plus. That's on
yes,
Wednesday.
That's what I told you about.
Yes, which is one that had we... frankly known about it sooner, we might have reviewed that on this week's show, but...
Are you sure that's on this week?
I am 100% sure it's on this week, okay. Yes.
We did know about it.
Well, I got a press release about it a little bit late in the day, I think it was yesterday, so I didn't know, and I added it to the calendar yesterday, so... but yes, that is on... what is Good American Family, Boydie?
I can tell
Disney
you.
Plus.
Go on, who is it? What is it, Kay? Tell us.
Oh, Kay can tell us for various reasons.
Are you an official spokesman for Good American Family?
I hosted the screening, and
of course
it stars Ellen Pompeo, Mark
Duplass, yes,
and Imogen Faith Reed, and it's based on the real story about Natalia Grace, who was an Ukrainian orphan adopted by an American couple. I told you about
yes,
it a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, you did. You did indeed. Yes.
And it's about the fact that, she was this young girl with dwarfism who her mother, the adopted mother, eventually felt that she was older than she was saying she was.
Okay. Anything else, Boydie?
There's a thing called The Gardener on Netflix on Friday the 11th, which is a Spanish language show set in a gardening centre. But that is a ruse. That is a cover for illegal activity being run by a ruthless crime matriarch. And it's all to do with she uses her own son and involved in the whole thing as well. There's The Ex-Wife Part 2. Do you remember The Ex-Wife? It was on Paramount Plus. With,
it had a lot of property porn in it.
Yeah, exactly. Celine Buckens, Katie McGrath, Jordan Stevens was in it. Former pop star. In fact, former and current. Pop star, because I think Rizzle kicks are back, aren't they? You'd be pleased to know, James.
I don't know what a Rizzle kick is.
I know
but...
you don't. I know you don't. Anyway, that The Ex-Wife Part 2 is the sequel, is on Paramount Plus from Thursday, the 10th of April. And that is about it, as far as I'm concerned.
What is our pick of the week?
Okay.
Hacks.
I'm going to say Your Friends and Neighbours because it's new, but Hacks is obviously in my heart.
It is Your Friends and Neighbours for me, without a shadow of a doubt. Though I did very much enjoy Reunion, has to be said.
It's a good week.
Was a good week. It was a good week for TV.
Very good week.
Been even better week next week. We've got The Last of Us.
I think I feel a terrible sore throat coming on.
Yeah. Can't wait that. We'll also have Charlie Brooker and Jessica Rhodes talking Black Mirror on next week's show. And as well as The Last of Us, we'll be doing one or more of Government Cheese, which comes to Apple. The Stolen Girl coming to Disney Plus.
Ooh, I want to watch that.
There's Leverage Redemption Season 3. Probably won't be covering that. That's on Prime. And Fake comes to ITVX. So... We'll have a confab. We'll let you know what you're doing. If you've enjoyed this week's show, for it is over, please do head over to some kind of platform. Pocket Cast. People have been saying leaving reviews on Pocket Cast. I use Pocket Cast for my podcasts. Yeah. So maybe I'll leave a review of this show, a 5-star rating, and not the 1-star rating that we received recently from someone who simply didn't like the fact that Say Nothing didn't appear on our Shows of the Year list. So they gave us a 1-star review. I'd say that's a bit harsh. but anyway, so that was something that happened. Don't do that. Don't be like him. Please leave us a 5-star review. That'd be lovely.
People have, by the way. I just want to tell you the last one we received said, been meaning to leave a review for ages, but James's bad cop, please, for reviews. Finally stuck in my head. Let there be cake.
There you go. That's how bad cop works. Right. Leave us a 5-star review or Boydie will come round to your house and not in a good way.
God.
There you go. That's a threat. Okay, yes, we'll be back on next week's show. And we'll also be back on Pilot Plus, which will be on Thursday. We'll be talking about Black Mirror. In the meantime, here is the end music of the show. Be sure to stay for the Ooh, Lulu. Pilot out.